Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, joined with Joel Elkonen, co-host of the Benzinga Pre-Market Prep Show, also editor of the Pre-Market Prep website. Now Joel, the banking sector, I'm sure you've talked about it a lot this week. We've been talking about it all this week. A lot of money has been shored up for these banks to make depositors whole. Approximately $152 billion has been borrowed by these U.S. banks from the Fed this week. There's even a $2 trillion facility out there that could be drawn on. Again, if more issues come out of this banking sector, it's also spread to Europe as well. Overall, though, Joel, what are you taking away from the banking issues within the U.S.? Is this just the start of something bigger in your eyes?
Good afternoon, Chad and Corey. Thanks for having me, as always, on March Madness. Is kind of market madness. My wife had a good name for my daily wrap yesterday. I said, oh, honest, smart. I called it March Madness. She goes, why don't you call it market madness? And I'm like, duh. But I don't think so, guys. I mean, you had a situation during the financial crisis of 2008 that really went deep into the public, right? You had tomato pickers and strippers living in, you know, million-dollar houses. There were loans, collateralized loans being sold to bank, to bank, to bank. And in this situation, you have banks being penalized for having, you know, too much in deposits. And a big reason for that, and which really hasn't been discussed much, is that, you know, the PPP programs during the pandemic, giving money to smaller businesses. Well, it wasn't the big banks doing that. It was the little, it was the regional banks, and they were in charge of that. They got, you know, the influx of money. Now, the problem is they invested in it. You know, they had to put the money to work somewhere, and they invested it at very low rates, which would be okay if they didn't have a forced liquidation. So they're at, you know, they're forced to liquidate in this rising rate environment. So I could very well be wrong. The market is trying to tell me I'm wrong, but I think you're looking at just a very, like, you know, 6 months from now, what are people going to be talking about? I don't think it's going to be this.
Well, Joel, that's an interesting take on it. And I think you're right. Sometimes the markets like to overreact and they like to take the news of the day and make it the only thing that's important. So some of this may blow over, but as far as those assets that they had borrowed, the bonds that they were buying, it wasn't in an environment that we've ever seen before, because the Fed has raised rates so aggressively last year and moving into this year that it just changed the whole dynamics of the yield curve and the bond market. And so for a while, rates were screaming higher with those rate hikes, not just in the U.S., but globally. But now the tables have turned again. Now rates have been falling and people have been buying bonds for a safe haven bid. What do you make of this dynamic where we've had such a steep decline in the 2-year and the 10-year this week because everybody's buying bonds again to get those yields and to get out of some of the riskier assets?
I think it's kind of a forced pivot here, right? I'm looking at the 30-year bond here, and, you know, you got the flight to quality, and that the Fed is, you know, I think their hand's going to be forced here. You know, are they going to wait, you know, fighting inflation versus sinking the banking sector? So I think, once again, it's the market forcing the Fed's hand. I never thought they were going a half. I'll concede with the Fed tool that they're going to go a quarter. But if they go, I think it's going to be a quarter, and then they're going to be dovish. Or if they really want to pull, you know, a rabbit out of their hat, you know, they'll go no rate. You know, they'll go no rate hike. I don't think they don't want to do that because they don't want to feel like they're kowtowing to the market. But I think I'm locking in rates, baby. I'm locking in rates right now, T-bills, you know, whatever I can get my hands on, because I don't think rates are going to crater, but I think they're going to go down. And one thing you have to understand is that the Fed has some tools in their tool belt here, right? Because they've taken rates up. You know, back in 2008, they did have some ammunition, but it was such a widespread contagion that, you know, it was defaults, right? It was people not being able to make their payments, and then those, you know, being tied to swaps and everything. So, oh boy, I'm sounding so bullish here. I better stop.
Well, let me throw this at you then here, Joel, because look, this is at least market-wise a little different than 2008 because we haven't seen the crater in the US markets, or for that matter, in a lot of markets. Yes, the banking sector has gone down. Yes, yields have dropped, but you can still make the argument they are within ranges, wide ranges that they have traded within for, let's say, going back through last year. Do you think this starts to change that? Do you think we do finally get some breaks in these wide ranges in almost every market we've seen?
So with the interest rates, I don't think they're going to ratchet it right down. I think that what the market doesn't like and what investors don't like is instability, right? Is the unknown. And with the way they've been taking rates up, we don't know what the long-term impact is going to be. So first of all, and I've said this, I reiterated this several times on your show, they got to stop taking them up. And I'm not necessarily, when I mean a pivot, I'm not necessarily saying that they're going to take them down. Just have them be steady. Let the banks adjust to the rates. Let them, let's see. I mean, unemployment is almost sure to tick up, tick up. You're getting, a lot of people laid off. They gotta put on the brakes and see what the damages they've done already.
Well, Joel, you also mentioned a couple calls ago that you felt back in January that maybe we'd made the highs for the year in the general equity markets. Are you still looking at things that same way?
Yesterday had me doing the backstroke a little bit, but no, I'm still going to stick with that because I still don't think the Fed's going to pivot as like take rates down. I mean, there's different projections of when they're going to do that. Earnings haven't been great, right? And they keep giving the markets a pass on the earnings season. So I don't know what is going to take to get us back. Now we're 250 points off the high that we made. So, I mean, the market doesn't have to go up big every year or go down big every year. There could be years of consolidation in trading ranges, and you have to adjust your style, but that's the norm. The norm is range-bound trading. The norm isn't 2020. The norm isn't 2021. The norm isn't 2022. The norm is range-bound markets. Now you've had heightened volatility. You have algorithms that jump on anything. You have a social media, that perpetuates, certain things just to their own advantage. So it's a big environment, but I'll stick with that. I mean, I guess I can stick with it until it gets a lot closer, right?
Yes, you can. That is true, Joel. What about the rotation of money, though, into the safer havens? Gold's done well. Yes, bonds have done well. Some of the other, I guess, safer assets have done well. Is this something to ride?
I don't know. You guys, I've been tearing my hair out in this gold market forever, right? And here I've said to myself, "Oh, we get back to 1975, 2000, I'm selling." I don't know what I would put it into. I've dipped my toe into some of these regional banks, and that's a heart attack ready to happen. So I did make a small asset allocation to that. I'm certainly not buying gold up here, looking for a breakout of 2000. That might be the right case, but I'm not selling it either. What I think is interesting about if I was to buy, I mean, hello, silver, wake up. There's a rally going on here. And I thought that a couple days ago. So I think I'd like to see silver play catch up to the gold. And then, that'd be a little bit more confirmation. But the silver has just got back about half of its move right now from the February high to the March low. So would it be buying gold out here if I had a huge, I mean, if it was overweighted in my portfolio, maybe I'd be peeling out a little bit. But silver to me is the one that looks a little bit more attractive for the catch-up trade.
Well, Joel, we should note that as we're recording this, gold is up at 1977, almost 1978, making a new high for the year for 2023. And silver is outperforming gold. It's up about 4% on the day, but
Yep.
gold's up about 2.8. So we're starting to see that. So we'll keep tabs on silver, gold's scrappy little brother. But you had also made a point to us that your partner Dennis had made on the pre-market prep show, and that is that some investors are flocking into companies that can show good cash flows and have low
Yeah.
debt. And you mentioned Microsoft as an example. I think that might be another area to explore for investors just looking for solid companies.
Yeah. We were going back to our playbook for 2008, and what were the what companies survived? The ones that had the cash and the cash flow and the move in tech. I mean, it was rotate the hell out of everything and go into tech. The move in Microsoft is the most pronounced, probably riding the hills of the AI. Nvidia just on a just absolute roll here. So I didn't check AMD today. But believe it or not, that's the rotation. The rotation is into tech because these are companies that have a cash flow, that have low debt. I mean, Apple has some debt, but they could, just go to their bank and, and pay it off. So believe it or not, it's the rotation. The rotation's into the tech stocks, and that's reflected. Google broke out at 96. That's in triple digits. Amazon giving back a little bit today. I mean, the market likes what the market likes. And right now it's tech stocks.
What about oil too, Joel? Oil keeps on dropping. It's now below 70, which it was in a pretty defined range of 70 to 80. Now it is, 66 and change. How worried are you about the oil sector continuing to drop?
Well, I'm not worried at all because I've been bearish for a long time and I don't own any oil stocks. I missed the big rally, but that's good for the inflation front, right? I mean, if you look at the factors out there that, components of inflation, I mean, you can look at it two ways. Yeah, it's good for inflation, or B, it means people, we're going into recession and we don't need as much oil. But there's always been backwardation during this entire move, and that's when the back months are trading below the front months. Those are what the hedgers, those are what the commercials, those are what the big players are doing. And until that turns around, I'm not going to be bullish at all. I mean, you can almost bank on an OPEC cut now. Oh, we're cutting production, and then you get a rally. Every time you do that, man, palms out, sell those rallies. Because the equilibrium in crude, we've talked about this before, was it fairly valued at 120? No. Was it undervalued at 10? Forget about that negative day. No. You take those in the middle, you come up with 55, 60 bucks. That's the historical trading price for crude, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, Joel, always great hearing from you. And now, boy, oh boy, there's a lot more for us to talk about in these markets outside of simple inflation, job number, and Fed. But let's remember, Fed is next week, and boy, oh boy, that's going to be an important meeting. Joel, thank you as always for your time. Have a great weekend, my friend.
All right. Thank you.